Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Rob Cohen's 1996 film Dragonheart. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Well, Ben, I managed to pull myself out of the pool to watch this movie, so I think I'm doing pretty good.
It's November. You're in the pool these days?
Yeah. Yeah. Man, okay. Sporting. Pulling myself out of it under my own weight.
Getting a little exercise in there.
It's a great day to be alive, I'll tell you that much.
Nice. Our guest today is a staff writer at ScreenRant.com who joined us for one of my favorite discussions we've had on this podcast for a movie called Once Upon a Time in the West. Mike Eisenberg, thanks so much for joining us again on the show.
No problem. I just put the toilet paper down after watching this movie. I'm ready to go.
Nice. All right. Well, yeah, we'll get into that very shortly. So if you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. And you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So I've got the character name game here. Mike, just in case you don't remember, this is where I'll give you guys a character's name, and you have to guess at the end of the show what movie that character is from, keeping in mind there has to be some sort of, probably like 1 degree of separation between this character and a movie that came out in wide release this past weekend. So the character's name for this week is Will Dormer. Will Dormer. So be thinking Dormer. About that. And we'll come back to it at the very end. But in the meantime, let's move into the media consumed part of the show. This is the section where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, or things of that sort, TV shows, movies, comics, anything like that. Tyler, we generally start with you. What have you been consuming this week?
Well, can we start with Mike?
Absolutely.
Because I have a question for Mike before
okay.
you get started.
Let's Mike, start with Mike. What have you been consuming, sir?
Oh.
A lot of sushi. One,
and
which makes me worried about that whole salmon overdosing thing. Anyway, I'm currently consuming Call of Duty 4 or whatever it is now, Modern Warfare 3.
Okay,
and it's pretty awesome. I gotta say, it's got that sort of that cinematic quality that I like in video games. I don't really like to play. I mean, I play sports games every once in a while, but I tend to move towards these games that have a lot of action cinema to them, if you know what I mean.
Like,
the thing I like about this game is that it's hardly different from the previous one, which I was addicted to, and I don't really play video games that much, so I've got to say that on the video game front, this is good. It's got all the things that I liked about the classic one, plus a lot of like really awesome epic Michael Bay shit going on, like not to spoil anything, but I'll just give a little. It happens in the beginning of the game anyway. There's like a chopper fight in Manhattan, and that in and of itself is pretty awesome.
Nice.
But on the movie side, I just got back from two movies, J. Edgar and Like Crazy. And first of all, Like Crazy was like fantastic.
Nice.
I think that's what you're supposed to do, right?
I think so, yeah.
Professional writer.
Headlines.
Yeah, that's a New York Times front page thing.
Yeah, in huge font. No, it was really good. If you like Blue Valentine, you'd really like this because it's basically Blue Valentine minus the trailer trash. It's great. It's got it's got everything that all these indie movies always bring to the table. But J. Edgar, on the other hand, was like a piece of dog shit.
that was my question for you, Mike.
Oh my god, it's so bad. It's Clint Eastwood, I think, is a really terrible director. And I know that's a heated discussion on some ends. I mentioned that on Twitter the other day, and I got a whole bunch of feedback from people who think I'm full of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, personally, I just don't like the movies he makes. They're boring, and the desaturated look is more of a comment on his films as storytelling. They're just desaturated. They don't give me anything to really chew on.
Mm.
And he always seems to just skim the surface, and he picks something that he is fascinated by, but it's never, for me, what I'm fascinated by. Like, I studied FBI in college for a semester, not like it's my major, but, you know. And I found it fascinating, and J. Edgar's stuff was amazing. And, yes, the whole homosexual side of his life is very intriguing, but I think to even approach it.
Spoilers.
No, I mean, I didn't think it. Well, I didn't think that was a spoiler because
no,
it's kind of.
It's not. He's messing with you.
Okay, but you could get into spoilers on that. I'll tell you, there's no butt sex in the movie. But it is still, it's like Brokeback Mountain meets Grumpy Old Men, and it's just kind of disappointing on that front. And it's just, it could have been so much better, and it just wasn't. And I'm disappointed, but I guess I'm just happy we got a movie about J. Edgar, because he's, in my opinion, the most intriguing American that we've ever had.
Wow. Man, that is high praise for an individual. I also saw the movie and didn't like it at all, so I'm glad that you didn't really care for it just for the sake of solidarity, I guess. But
my question to Mike was, because I think, Mike, you wanted to come on if we watched Gran Torino, because you're not a big fan of Gran Torino either. And looking back at Eastwood's directorial career or directing career, however you say it.
Yeah, you're right.
Is it something that he does in his movies? Is it the man himself, or what is it that kind of puts you on edge and not enjoying the movie? Because if you look back at like Unforgiven, which I kind of associate with one of his big first directorial movies, I mean, that's really good. But then I can understand, because I never saw, I mean, the last movie I think I saw was Gran Torino. I didn't see the one with the big Matt Damon psychic thing.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen J. Edgar. So I was wondering if there's something like in particular that just rubs you the wrong way.
Well, because I could go on for hours. I'm trying to think of the best way to concisely say this is that, well, first of all, I do like that he has a look. I think I can respect a director who can find a way to create something where you turn on that film, you know, it's his film. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a Clint Eastwood film. But the problem with it is that it's not because he's making a good movie. It's not like you turn on Spielberg and you see, oh, look, there's the he doesn't have a father plot line. That must be Spielberg. You know, it's like, that's right. Interesting, I guess. But his is just desaturated, like over too dark look. But that's not my real thing. My thing is that when I look at his films, there are a couple of good ones in there. Like, I liked Flags of Our Fathers. I thought that was good, even though it was a little slow. And I liked, I thought Gran Torino was hilarious. But I don't know if he intended it to be hilarious. And I found Unforgiven. I mean, everybody loves Unforgiven, right?
Yeah.
Everybody likes that movie. But overall, I just think he just doesn't know how to keep an audience engaged. And he finds a way to make everything boring. And to drag it out in a way that never feels cohesive. It happened with, like, Invictus, one of the most important sort of stories of our generation, I would say. And not our generation, but... and he just kind of made it about rugby instead of about the real things that were happening. And I didn't really pay attention to that movie. I shouldn't say anything. But Gran Torino, I just like that's the one that made me hate him as a director, as opposed to just not like him, because he made a movie that was funny and offensive at the same time, be boring, and like all his snarling was so great and it was so funny, but he just had no idea, he had no direction on these actors, and when you look at his career, my main point here, when you look at his career, the only times that you can really give him praise are the performances by the lead, by the like star actors, and that makes me think that he's not a great director, that it's Leonardo DiCaprio who made J. Edgar interesting, that it's Matt Damon that made Invictus bearable, and it's himself that made Gran Torino watchable. It's never, everybody else falls apart. He can't direct anybody unless they've come to the table with a ton of talent. And I just think that his movies are boring. They're dull, and they're just not for a lot of people.
Yeah. I tend to agree with you for the most part, just because a lot of his movies are not very energetic. Like, it doesn't seem like there's any passion behind them. He seems, I mean, you know, Eastwood is one of the more notorious directors in Hollywood for his, really quick filmmaking style. You know, he makes practically a movie every year or something along those lines, you know, every year, maybe every two, and is, you know, widely known for, you know, doing like one or two takes and then just moving on and stuff like that, and always coming in, you know, in on time, under budget, stuff like that. So it just seems like he, the older he gets, maybe the worse it gets as far as that stuff goes. Like, he realizes he doesn't have that much time left and is just trying to like finish movies so he can knock stuff off his bucket list or something. I don't know what it is, but
well, my closing thought on the topic is that, why is he making these films? So when I watch a movie, that is my number one thinking. That's what I leave the theater trying to figure out, is why did I just spend 2 hours there? Not in a negative way. Just that's what a movie is to me. It's 2 hours of a condensed storyline chosen to be told a certain way. Why are you telling me this story, and why are you telling it to me this way?
Mm-hmm.
And I never seem to walk away from his films with a real message other than let me just show you something real quick. And it makes me think about all the other directors that could have done the stories that he's choosing so much better. And maybe it's cliche, maybe it's because Scorsese and DiCaprio worked together so much, but man, I would have just so much rather have seen Scorsese's version of J. Edgar.
Yeah.
Than Clint Eastwood's.
Yeah. But we need to see Hugo.
But it also made me think about just like an idea that I'll throw out there in case there's a filmmaker out there who wants to do it instead. Is to make a biopic about somebody with whose life spans so much time, like J. Edgar's, and commit the actor to three films that take place 10 years apart, and actually put the time in for that film. And I understand, like, the director could be dead by the time the third one happens, or even the actor. But
wait, the actual films are 10 years apart?
Yes, and I'm talking, like, oh, wow. Let's do something new. Let's do something new that we've never seen with stories like this, and let's get an actor to do it just like that, 10 years apart.
Wow.
Revisit the character, and I don't know. It's probably a terrible idea, but I would love to see that.
Well, it's interesting. Have you ever heard of Richard Linklater's Before Sunrise, Before Sunset series? You know,
absolutely. It's one of my Before Sunrise is my favorite romance film of all time.
Yeah, it's really, really fantastic. If you guys are listening to this and don't know what we're talking about, seek those movies out. What'd you say, Tyler?
Is that Ethan Hawke?
Yeah. Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy. And they actually did that in those movies. They take place, I think it's 8 years, maybe nine, in real time. Like, there was 8 or 9 years that elapsed between the making of the movie. And then the characters actually aged 8 or 9 years in the story world, too. So there's...
Well, another good example of that is Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Right?
Oh, man. Don't. Don't you dare. Well,
18 years?
I should mention that I somewhere in passing, I remember hearing about a documentary that actually revisits the same families once every 8 years.
Yeah, and I think Linklater is responsible for that, too. I think
that'd be interesting. Yeah. I need to watch that, because that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think it's from what I understand, and I've only heard about it in passing, just like you. I'm pretty sure it's actually still going on, like still being filmed. But I could be wrong about that. But yeah,
but
wow.
You get my point, right? You get my point that I don't think he has a grasp on what audiences want to see. And I know that the immediate response to that is, well, audiences have proven that they don't know what they want to see because they pay, you know, all this money to watch shitty movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we're talking about different audiences here, and I think that to make a movie that's at once very informative and engaging about a historical figure, and another at the same time also really exciting and fun to watch, big difference there.
Yeah.
And yeah,
cool. So Tyler, what have you been consuming?
Oh yeah. Great, coming down from a great conversation. Let's dumb it down a little bit by my media consumed points. Green Lantern, the animated series, premiered this weekend. The long-awaited, I don't know if the long-awaited, I always say that about everything. The awaited, I thought it would maybe be a sequel to the movie, like interim adventures between Green Lantern movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I was hoping against it being like another origin story deal, where Green Lantern really didn't have to be an origin story. You can just kind of summed it up in like 10 minutes. Guy finds a ring, becomes a superhero, and then have a 2-hour adventure. But thankfully, what?
We talking about Lord of the Rings or Green Lantern?
No, Green Lantern. Yeah. I think they could have summed up the Lord of the Rings in about 5 minutes, right? And just continue on with like the Silmarillion and stuff like that. But Green Lantern, it's I don't know if Geoff Johns has anything to do with it, but it feels like it does. Although I'm not going to say that he has anything to do with it. I'm sure he does. But it was a lot more enjoyable than the actual Ryan Reynolds movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I said something along the lines of the animated TV show did what the big blockbuster movie couldn't. You know, characters, kind of cool action scenes. It's CG, kind of like the Clone Wars, except it's a little kiddier, I guess. A little more. I mean, Clone Wars looks pretty childish on its own, but this looks just a lot more like trying to sell toys kind of thing. So check that out if you want to.
Did Nathan Fillion do the voice of Green Lantern?
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. All right.
I haven't looked at the specs of the show yet.
Okay.
And plus, they always play it on TV, and then when they roll the credits for the show at the end, like they always shrink it down, showing a preview for something.
Yeah.
I hate when they do that because then I can't read the text.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like if I recognize a voice, I'm like, I wonder who that is, or I think I know who that is. I'm gonna check at the end of the show, and then you can't see it because they freaking minimize it.
I like the
God, that's what commercials
the
are for.
Play the credits so fast that you can't even like conceivably read one thing.
Yeah,
they'll do that too. They'll speed it up too, so they can get the next block going or whatever they do.
I like those.
That's why I like Clone Wars on StarWars.com because they don't have commercials and they play all of the credits.
Nice.
So kudos to them. What we haven't mentioned this season, The Walking Dead. Have you guys been checking that out?
I have not. I stopped watching it. Yeah, I gave up.
Wow. I didn't like it.
I tend to watch shows like that. I tend to watch the pilot to see what's going to happen, and then I stay away from it so I can watch it on home video later all at once.
Nice.
I'm weird like that. I like to do. I'd rather do it that way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know, man. The first season just bored me to death. Like I loved the pilot. That was really, really good. And then everything else after that just seemed to go to a snail's pace, and nothing, nothing really did it for me for the whole rest of that season, I don't think. Looking back on it now, anyway, that's how I think about it. But
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, the characters are interesting to an extent, and but this season, I mean, it's okay. It's really replaced the zombie killing with drama.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like dealing with the zombies is more of a subplot than anything, because you have to deal with all these other characters and their emotions and blah, 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 blah. And what I really want to see is just like, you know, violence and gore. And that's what I expect from a zombie movie. And I mean, they maybe have one every episode, maybe one blow to the head or something, but it's really not the that first episode that was just like zombies everywhere and it was like a freaky experience. Now it's like if they see like a group, although there was one pretty sweet episode last week where they went to the school to get some medical equipment, and like the school was just overrun by zombies, and so like only two guys went in and like tried to get the equipment, and all the zombies were like cornering them in the halls. So that was a pretty good aspect of the episode.
Were they kid zombies?
That would have been odd. Like them just chilling out, smoking outside of the cafeteria and stuff.
Rocket.
I think they were full grown adults. I think it might have been like the PTA.
Okay.
So that was probably the highlight for this season so far. But you know, just more zombie stuff. That's all we need. I don't need any. Don't need any drama. I have enough of that in the real world.
Nice.
And finally, Nova, a PBS science docu-series, I guess you want to call it, a documentary/TV series. They're doing a special series this month called The Fabric of the Cosmos. It's based on a book titled the same thing by Brian Greene, who also hosts the show on Nova. And they're talking about, like, you know, what is time? What is space? And, you know, kind of trying to explain these new theories that, you know, Einstein kind of paved the road towards, and like string theory and things like this. And I always thought like our whole universe was based in Newtonian physics. And apparently there's a lot of physicists that believe that, like, Newtonian physics are just kind of out the window now. It's all about Einstein's theories. Hmm. And a lot of Einstein's theories just don't make sense to me, but it's still interesting to watch. And a lot of this stuff is just kind of theoretical, so we don't really know for sure, like, if all this stuff is true. But they make it – it was kind of like that South Park episode of the History Channel.
Right.
Where they're like, yeah, well, we don't know how to prove it, but there's a good chance that this is – how it works.
But we can't prove it's not this.
Right. There's no evidence that says it's not true. But the one thing they did do was, like, they took atomic clocks, and this was pretty cool, like the World Clock Center, wherever, where they have the official time of the world. Like, it's all based on the vibrations of, like, a cesium atom. And the way they proved Einstein's theory that time slows down as you go faster, mm-hmm. They took two atomic clocks, they put one on a plane and flew it around the world, and then they kept another one, you know, somewhere on Earth. And, like, it was off by, like, millionths of a second, but that kind of added to the theory that time does slow down as you approach the speed of light.
Okay.
And it was just kind of stuff like that. I mean, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, check it out on your local PBS station.
Nice.
There might be available online. I haven't checked the past episodes. But, okay. You know, pretty mind-bending stuff, I'll tell you that much.
Good, good.
What channel again?
PBS. It might be like Channel 8 or 2 on your local Time Warner. I don't know. PBS. PBS shows Nova. It's brought cool. to you by viewers like you.
Anything else, Tyler?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. I got a chance to go to the AFI Film Festival this past week and saw a bunch of movies. I'm just going to run down a list of the ones that I saw and give, like, a two-sentence review of each of them. I saw a movie called Miss Bala, which is, I believe, a Mexican film. Didn't care for it. It's got a good lead performance from, I think her name is Stephanie. I'm not going to look it up. I'm sorry. But it's...
Is that how you pronounce it?
No. That's
look it up? Sorry?
That's the English pronunciation.
Wait, Ben, here's your one-sentence review. Olay? More like, no way.
That's really good. I'll go with that.
Yeah.
Kill List is a movie that... is a British film, and it reminded me a lot of The Wicker Man, the original Wicker Man, not the god-awful Nicolas Cage.
I like that one.
Remake. Have you ever seen the original, Tyler?
I haven't seen the original, so I'm going to assume Nick Cage one is my favorite.
Okay, all right. Well, if you want an actual good movie, go watch the original Wicker Man, because that movie is, like, really creepy, and it's got a lot of this kind of, like... cult stuff that's going on. It's just very, very unsettling. And Kill List, like, starts out as one movie, and then by the end of it, it is just, it's full on, like, Old Boy meets The Wicker Man, and it is freaking insane. It's so effed up by the end of this movie. I can't possibly talk about it any more than that, because it would give away a lot of the stuff that happens. But if you guys are into movies that just kind of punch you in the gut right at the end, that is one of them. So take a look at Kill List. I think it'll be out. I'm not sure when. I know it's out in the United Kingdom now, I'm pretty sure. Anyway.
Nick Cage isn't in it?
Nick Cage is not in it. It has nothing to do with Nick Cage whatsoever.
Okay.
The next one was called Rampart. This is a police drama starring Woody Harrelson. He's really good in it, and again, the movie is not really that great. So I don't know. I've heard some vague whispers about Oscar buzz for him. I don't know if I really can back that 100%. He's good, but I don't know about Oscar worthy. Speaking of something,
no cheers for Rampart.
No, not really. Wait, is that some sort of pun that I'm missing or something?
Think about it for a second.
For Woody Harrelson. Yeah, because it's on the team, so cheers. I got you. Okay, yeah, sorry.
There we go.
Okay. Speaking of something that might be Oscar-worthy, actually, is a movie called My Week with Marilyn, and this one stars Michelle Williams as Marilyn Monroe. She is phenomenal in this movie. I think the Oscar is probably hers to lose at this point. She's really, really good. The movie itself is also really awesome. It's very... kind of a light-hearted, kind of brisk type of movie. It gets into some a couple little dark dramatic corners here and there, but for the most part, it's like this year's The King's Speech, like, you know, uplifting, stuff like that, but with more enjoyable performances. So
who's the kid in that movie, the red, what's it, Red Rum?
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne or something like that, I think.
He was, what's the CIA movie that he was in?
Was it The Good Shepherd? I'm not sure.
God, he was terrible in that movie. Is he okay in this?
Yeah, he was kind of the lead, because it's called My Week with Marilyn, and he is the my in the title, so he's like the main guy.
It was his week.
Right. Kenneth
Branagh. Is Joe DiMaggio in it?
No. Kenneth Branagh, the director of Thor, is also in it.
Is this?
And he does a really good job. He plays Laurence Olivier, and he's directing a movie in England in which stars Marilyn Monroe, and she comes over for the first time. It's really, really good stuff. So,
is this a sequel to One Night in Paris?
No. Nothing.
Officially?
Nothing like that.
Man.
Nothing as awesome as that. Another movie is called Haywire. This is Steven Soderbergh's new movie. It stars Gina Carano, the MMA fighter. That one was really awesome. It has such a great cast. She's not great in it because this is like her first film, and I wouldn't really expect her to be a great actress coming from that kind of a background. But she holds it okay, but she's really lifted up by the supporting cast, which features Ewan McGregor, Michael Douglas, Antonio Banderas, Channing Tatum, Michael Angarano. How's that pronounced? Hang on, let me look this up.
Angarano. She's also an American Gladiator.
Yes, yeah,
it was.
Question: is that film? There's a scene in the trailer where she's fighting. It's maybe a spoiler, so skip ahead like 10 seconds if you care. But there's a scene in the trailer where there's no sound except for their fighting with Fassbender. Is that like as quiet and awesome as it is in the trailer?
Yes, yeah.
Good.
And Michael Fassbender, as you mentioned, is in this movie, and he does a really good job too. So is like. It's hard to really describe. It's Soderbergh's take on the spy movie genre. So if you guys are fans of Soderbergh's work, you know, he did like the Ocean's 11 movies and Sex, Lies, and Videotape. He did Contagion earlier this year. If you like the way that his movies are put together with the lighting and the really kind of interesting moods and tones and stuff that he gets out of his films, this movie is just that, but in the action genre instead. So there's a lot to like for me anyway in Haywire. So that one will be out early next year. Another Michael Fassbender movie was there. It was called Shame, and this is a movie where he's like addicted to sex. It's really, really intense. It's NC-17, and Fox Searchlight bought it, and it's going to be out in theaters, I think, at the end of this month. Again, forgive me for not knowing these dates off the top of my head, but that one is going to stay NC-17, and it's going to be just as intense in theaters as the way I saw it at this festival. And a lot of times they'll show movies like kind of uncut at festivals like this, and then studios will buy them up and be like, okay, we need to tone this back a little bit, and then, you know, re-rate it or something like that. But this is just going to stay exactly the same way it was. And he and Fassbender and Carey Mulligan are in this one, and both of them are fantastic. A guy named Steve McQueen, not that Steve McQueen, directed this movie. He also did a Michael Fassbender movie called Hunger recently that I have not yet seen. But Shame is well put together, but and it has a lot of really, really long takes, which I love. Those are like, that's like my favorite filmmaking technique, or one of them. Really, really long shots, and yeah. So
I just
go ahead.
I just like how you had to use the word masturbate in your review.
Yeah.
And not just new movies first.
Yes, thank you.
On a scale of like 1 to Dirk Diggler, how big would you say Fassbender's schlong is in this movie?
Yeah, Ben.
I'd give it a Dirk Diggler.
That means you know how big Dirk Diggler's Jonathan is.
There's a lot of flopping around and stuff in this movie.
Oh,
so,
God.
Yeah. But Carey Mulligan's also full frontal for the guys out there, so I don't know. Whatever.
And
whatever that means.
Ever.
If that's the only reason that you go to see these movies, then yes, those are things that you can find out about them. The movie itself, like the way it treats sex addiction and the way it treats just, I guess, sex in general, just makes it feel so wrong, and so it just takes all of the passion out of it by the time the movie
gets
to the end.
But there's boobies, right?
Yes, Tyler. Yes.
Oh yeah.
Are there dragons is the real question.
No dragons.
Did he already ask that question?
That's coming up in 1 second. The last movie I want to mention is The Adventures of Tintin. This is Spielberg's new movie. That was the closing night festival, or film at the festival. Really, really awesome. It's going to end up on my favorites of the year list, I think. Motion capture looks fantastic. I mean, you guys have probably heard about this by now. And it's been going on for a while. Spielberg directed this first one. They're hoping to do a sequel, which Peter Jackson, the producer of this one, is going to direct. And then hopefully Spielberg and Peter Jackson will be able to co-direct the third movie in the series. It's really the character of Tintin is like wildly popular all over the world, everywhere except for America, seemingly. So if you guys have never heard of him or anything like that, definitely check this movie out. It's going to be out at the end of December or coming out like right before Christmas or something. So that's a good like family-friendly movie that also has really fantastic action and a bunch of cool stuff. I don't want to say too much about it. You guys can find out more about all these movies just by going to notjustnewmovies.com or geektyrant.com, where I actually wrote up all the reviews for all of them. So you can find out more in-depth stuff about it there. So go ahead.
Nice plug.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's what I do. All right, let's move on into our review of Dragonheart.
You don't think it gave me any pleasure, do you?
Long ago, in a time of darkness and tyranny, there was an evil king who threatened the land and its people. The only hope was an incredible alliance between a man of honor and a creature of legend.
All right, so Dragonheart came out in 1996. It was directed by Rob Cohen, who, unless my research skills are wildly inaccurate, also directed The Fast and the Furious, and I think the third Mummy movie, maybe the fourth Mummy movie. In any
not
case,
one of the Coen brothers?
No, definitely not one of the Coen brothers.
Not for sure.
Did you ever think about like what this guy, if he's at a party and he tells somebody he's a director, and they're like, "Oh yeah, what'd you direct?" and he just says all these movies, how would you react? I'm pretty sure that I would spit my drink in his face and laugh hysterically. Like, what a career this man has amassed.
First Fast and the Furious movie?
Let me run through his.
The third Mummy movie is not
good. It's good, but it's not like he's. It's not like, hey, what movies did you direct? I directed the Academy Award winning blank, and a few independent films. I'm really proud of my career.
Or you could just say my brothers made The Big Lebowski.
He might get more famous from that. But in any case, what did you guys think about Dragonheart? Mike, let's start with you.
Oh my God, it was amazing. It was amazing in the way that like watching a car accident would be amazing if you hated the people in it. It was so bad. This has to be one of the best worst movies ever, right?
I don't know. I think it's. Sure. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, I can agree. I mean, yeah, it was. I mean, it wasn't one of those bad, terrible movies. Although it was pretty bad, good. I don't know what they were trying to do here. I don't know if they were trying to make like a huge epic or something, or if it was like a kids movie, because it felt like kind of like a Disney movie, like, you know, Kid in King Arthur's Court or Angels in the Outfield. Like, it was that kind of, as if Dennis Quaid was a child and couldn't deliver his lines properly. And there was all this like weird stuff, like weird hints of like things going wrong in the movie.
Like what?
Oh, you want me to go into detail?
Yeah, let's do it.
Just intro. Well, I mean, like, you know, sometimes the dragon would like skip, the dragon graphics would skip. Like, okay. It wasn't kind of a fluid thing. Like, there was the one where, I don't know, he lifted his arm up and it like shifted. It shifted real weird. As if somebody was like, oh, we could try to smooth this out a little, but we need to, you know, we need to get going. So they're just going to have to, it's like in a blink, you kind of notice it.
Yeah.
And
let's not forget this was nominated for an Academy Award for visual.
Was it?
Yeah.
Really? I mean, it looked okay. I mean, the dragon looked okay. It kind of reminded me of like, you know, I thought Jurassic Park looked a lot better.
Yeah.
And think 3 years later they'd be like, hey, let's just take the Jurassic Park stuff and put some wings on it and fly it around, you know?
Yeah.
But as far as, like, him mouthing what he had to say, I thought that was pretty good. But there were a couple just kind of, like, little things that kind of put me off. The other thing was, like, Dennis Quaid's dialogue was – everyone else's dialogue was fairly all right. I mean, as far as not delivery-wise, but kind of the way it was worded. But his was, like, weird. I don't know if that had anything to do with the old code or something, whatever they were talking about.
He's so bad. It's so mean. He's the worst possible actor in that film, but is the main actor. I don't know how to describe it. He does this weird thing where he blinks in a different sort of pattern than he talks. He blinks really deliberately, and it just, like, stops when he – it stops for a half second, but he keeps talking, and it's so weird. It is, like, the strangest thing to watch if you ever pay attention to it.
Yeah, there's this weird thing – I was just going to say, there's this weird thing with, like, male actors in the late 90s doing period piece roles like this, because you have – Like kind of, vaguely, like, pretty well-respected actors like Dennis Quaid, and you've got, you know, Richard Gere and Kevin Costner doing...
Waterworld?
This a movie called First Night, which also features Sean Connery, and Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which is another kind of period piece, like, you know, where there's a lot of armor and kind of ridiculous dialogue along the same lines here. It's like, I don't know what kind of wave swept through Hollywood at that time where everybody's like, oh, okay, these guys are doing it. I need to get in on this. And this has got to be the worst of them. I mean, this whole movie is just terrible, like, all the way across. The only thing good about it is Randy Edelman's score, which I don't know if you guys noticed, featured... a song called To the Stars, which is used in, like, Academy Awards montages and a bunch of other stuff. Do you guys recognize that music piece there?
Absolutely. You know what made it so much better, though, was that now that I know that that's where that song is from, and every time I hear that at the Academy Awards, I'm going to start thinking about that little redheaded girl from Starship Troopers getting all three-eyed in Dragon.
Yeah, it's a real awesome piece. I mean,
they should have
just started with the piece and then built a good movie around the music. But I digress.
There's actually the song was used in a AMC Movies, like, pre-show thing that I actually found on YouTube, and I want to play it for you guys right now, just in case you grew up and maybe saw this and remember it from your childhood. So here we go. Let's listen to this real quick.
Let's all go to the movies.
Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
When you're hugging with your baby in the last row of the balcony.
It was a run by fruiting.
He's looking at you, kid.
So you guys remember listening to that or seeing that in theaters back in the day?
Yes, I do.
All right.
I wish I didn't now, but I definitely do.
It's a good piece.
One thing, okay, so this film definitely has stood the test of time musically, but I was watching it in the very first scene with Dennis Quaid training that little kid from Hannah. That is, the girl from Hannah is in this movie, right?
Ginger.
It is literally, I'm talking frame for frame, costume for costume, set design. That first scene in Troy where Brad Pitt is training Garrett Hedlund, I was shocked. I didn't realize it was literally copied a scene from Dragonheart.
Yeah, and it's like so much the same where they're even going under like rock formations and stuff like that too. Like it's really, really close.
Oh yeah, he even drinks from like a cup, a coconut shaped cup, while he's, you know, defending himself on the side. It's unbelievable. There's just so many moments in Dragonheart where it's like, when you know, you probably saw it in 96 and you liked it, but now that you have 10, however many years it's been, like, since then,
15,
yeah, damn, you've had that many years of movie experience since then, you probably haven't watched it in 5 years or something. It's so weird watching it after seeing all these other things, and it just makes it better and worse at the same time.
Yeah, the kid that looks like the girl from Hannah was just such a sniveling little punk in this movie. I mean, he does a great job at being somebody that you love to hate, so I'll give him that. And even like the older version of him, which is played by a different actor, that guy's, you know, equally douchey. So the thing that kind of, you know, trying to set aside all of the badness of this movie and just looking at it like plot-wise, I just don't understand why Dennis Quaid's character put all of his hopes and dreams in this kid, because he's clearly just a dick. So I don't know why he was just like, why he didn't, you know, as soon as he grew up and became, you know, the kind of same raving tyrant that his dad was, didn't just say, okay, I'm probably, you know, I'm out of here. Like you know, I don't know. He seemed, his character motivations made no sense to me, but
the guy that played the older king, the older redheaded king, he was the Professor Lupus from Harry Potter.
Yeah.
The one that turns into a werewolf.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. He's the werewolf. Yeah. I mean, freaking Dennis Quaid's character, Bowen, he's pretty much a moron. At that first whole section of the movie where everything's kind of introduced and then they do that like 12 years later thing was awful. Like, yes. I had so bad. Like, like everything happens so quickly and you're supposed
it's
to
so
like that could have been like the whole first half of the movie, but no.
And Tyler, I know you're a fan of like the Arthurian legend and this kind of time period and stuff, so it's got to be even more insulting to you watching a movie like this and having it turn out so poorly than just to somebody else, you know, like the average person on the street, I feel like.
Yes and no. I mean, they didn't really, you know, misinterpret Arthur legend or anything. I mean, unless they're hinting that Arthur had like dragons as friends or something. But they went to Avalon, which is usually the sighted place of Arthur's, where he lays when he's dead. But other than that, like, he was just, I mean, the whole thing where it's like Knights of the Old Table or of the Round Table. And then this is like, I don't know, like 100 years later or something. I mean, I guess that was kind of cool, but as I was going to say, like Excalibur, which we reviewed episode 4, that's kind of that, and the quest for Monty Python's Holy Grail movie are probably my favorite King Arthur.
Yeah.
King Arthur movies. But I didn't want to attack Dragonheart because of that. I mean, just the acting alone and some of the dialogue was just terrible.
Well, I do have praise for the film in that regard, is that it's they found a way to sort of pick up where it got ridiculous by adding Pete Postlewaite's character as this sort of like satire on the way that they used to write all these stories and these myths. Because it's like, okay, so he's best friends with this dragon and he's conning, he's conning villages. But Pete Postlewaite is always like 100 yards behind, always trying to, he gets there late, and so he writes these sensationalized, over-dramatic, romanticized sort of knight fighting the dragon story, and I keep imagining, like, this is what really happened, and then this guy wrote it like this, and we made all these serious movies about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think that was kind of one of the very, very few interesting things that this movie actually did. So getting back to some of the stuff that they did that wasn't interesting, the action in this movie is so god-awful. I mean, everything about it, like random explosions would happen that...
Napalm explosion?
Yeah, like that flames... I'm not even talking about like Draco shooting flames out, because that's fine. But when he shoots fire at a thatch roofed hut or something, it shouldn't blow up like there's, you know, 50 gallons of gasoline in it or something. There's everything is just way overblown and overdone in this movie. Everything from these, you know, the action sequences and all of the, you know, I mean, the story itself is just so I guess
pretty
chintzy. Yeah, exactly, like watered down and just cliche to the point of like, okay, you know that there's a revolution of like the oppressed peasants and they're gonna have a training montage and blah blah blah. It's just like everything is so plodding and just really really stupid. So I don't know,
consider this was probably, I don't know, like we were talking about when we saw it in 96, a lot of people might have liked it, but we've seen so many movies like that.
Well, I think the only people that would have liked it in 96 were us as, you know, 10 and 11-year-old kids. Like, I can't imagine. And, like, this is what you were saying earlier, Tyler. I think the movie is designed toward, aimed toward a younger audience. It's got to be, because there's nobody with fully cognitive, you know, full cognitive capabilities that can look at this movie and be like, okay, I haven't seen all this stuff 100 times and done way better elsewhere, you know?
Right. It was made for an ADD audience.
This is the film where if you say it sucks, you get 15, like, 25-year-old girls telling you that you're an idiot, and it's the greatest movie of all time, and that always kind of solidifies for me that a movie is bad.
Okay.
Women and movies. Movies and women.
Yeah. Woman says they like a movie. It's terrible.
Well, I didn't know what you were getting at there, Mike. Are you just saying because, like, maybe Dennis Quaid is so dreamy or something? What are you saying?
No, I just mean like, there's movies out there where, forget the girl thing, it's just that you if you say something bad about it on Twitter or Facebook, you're going to get five or six people who, for some reason, are very emotionally attached to the film and are angry that you hate it.
Yeah.
And it's weird. It's like, this movie made my childhood. How dare you say it sucks? I'm like, it does suck. This is like this movie's so bad. The dragon shoots snot rockets, literally.
Yeah, can he not blow fire through his mouth, only through his nose?
I think
a thing?
Yeah, I think that's what was implied in this movie.
Well, you would think, since it's all connected anyway, you should have both.
Yeah.
Because I can breathe through my nose and my mouth, because it all goes down the same tube.
Yep, yep.
Come on, physics or biology, whatever you want to say.
Dragon comics.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about Sean Connery. So Connery voices Draco, the lead dragon.
Oh, hello.
And something interesting that, you know, that I was looking at on Wikipedia about this says that that there was like 23 minutes of film time for Draco, as opposed to only 6.5 for the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park, and they use the same technology to kind of model the CGI and stuff on the dragon here. And you know, I thought for the time, yeah, I remember this being like, wow, yeah, this looks really good. And just now, it's super dated, and clearly technology has made like massive leaps and bounds since then. So it's just kind of not even nostalgic, just kind of like you just scoff at it when you look at it for the most part. But
well, it's still cool to look at, because if you look at when the dragon speaks, I mean, his mouth is fairly on par with the lines, which is, I imagine, and I know for a fact that it's really difficult to get the mouthing down. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get like joints and stuff, that's easy, but to get like the mouth to say certain things. And at the same time, you know, it wasn't like they could have done like a Dark Crystal Labyrinth kind of thing where they have like this huge dragon as a puppet or something.
Well, that's what they started with. That's what they wanted to do.
Really?
Originally. Yeah.
I guess what's weird about it is how do you justify – it's weird when you watch a dragon movie and you start thinking about the reality of it, because you shouldn't, first of all.
Well,
but
sure.
You know, we're thinking about it. Honestly, you look at it, you could put the dragon up there for so long that that's why they did it for 6 minutes in Jurassic Park. That's why you don't put them out there for that long, because then you start to study it and you start to wonder why this dragon looks more like a snake, or why like why this dragon looks a certain way
and why he can't breathe fire out of his mouth and stuff like that. Yeah.
And it's it's a buddy comedy. Yeah, I don't know if it was meant to be a comedy, but it sure ended up being one. I mean, it's like it's a buddy movie, so you have to keep him on screen for a certain amount of time.
Yeah, the writer, the guy who wrote the story for this, called it Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Dragon, which I thought was really stupid.
But I think it's just cool because you have something that doesn't exist, so you know your first thought is, okay, technology is allowing it, so we need to make it now, today. It's like we have things that exist, but we still make it into CG. I think that's what I get upset about. I mean, CG is fine when you're dealing with something that does not exist, but when you're having James Cameron, I'm always attacking James Cameron, when you say, oh, we would CG that sunset now. It's like, F you, buddy. Like, use the world around you. That's why we have films in the first place, is to kind of not create fake things that already exist.
Well, how would you feel about if this were animated? Because, I mean, looking at it, there's a certain element of How to Train Your Dragon in here.
I never saw that, so I don't know.
Well, yeah, no, I got that same thing, too. And I loved How to Train Your Dragon. So, you know, that's just the difference in storytelling. I think that's just a much more cohesive story, and it has, like, legitimate characters and, you know, heartfelt emotions and all of the things that a good movie that tells a real story should have, as opposed to this, which just seems like a smattering of random images and... Yeah, a buddy comedy, but it just doesn't really work that well. It's just like they started with this concept of, oh yeah, we'll have a knight and a dragon joined forces, but then they just come up with the most stupid cliche settings and plot points that happen around them. I don't know. It's just it's not very well done at all. But
yeah,
what did you guys think about Sean Connery's voice work?
And no quarry went unused in this film, in the making of this film. I believe there's at least like 7 or 8 different quarries used in the filming.
Yeah, the budget for this movie was like $17 million, so they didn't have enough budget to actually... Wait, what?
I read 57.
Oh.
Somewhere.
Okay. I don't know. On Wikipedia, it says 17. So yeah, you're probably right.
Wikipedia is never wrong, man.
But I was gonna say with $17 million in a budget, then they didn't have enough money to build actual buildings and real settings, so they just had to find quarries everywhere to film most of the movie in.
I was gonna say something about Connery's voice. Yeah, it didn't sound like a dragon at all. That was first of all one problem I had with it. I think he might have gone a little grittier. I don't know. I mean, you're breathing fire. Your tonsils have to be a little charred. Also, I think he spoke too soon. I don't think Connery's voice should have been introduced until later. I think it should have just been like a shadow, and then the dragon appears. But other than that, I mean, I love Connery, so anytime his voice is involved, I'm probably going to give a thumbs up.
Yeah, he just had like...
The man.
You know, the dialogue, we were talking about it being really awful for Dennis Quaid especially, but Draco had some pretty terrible stuff too. Like, there's a scene where it's like a rope scene where, like, Dennis Quaid, like, wraps this somehow, inexplicably launches a like, bolo ball attached to a rope and hooks it onto Connery, or onto Draco's leg, and... Instead of being flown up in the air, like you would assume, he's just, like, skidding along the ground on this rope, and then Connery, like, eventually lifts him, like, I don't know, 10, 12 feet off the ground, and he's, like, flying him through these woods and stuff, and it's like a video game. Like, Connery is doing voiceovers that would be found in a Star Fox 64 or something. He's like, that must have hurt. Yikes. Look out for that tree. Like, just stupid.
Do a barrel roll.
Yeah.
Yeah. I about lost my shit when he said yikes.
So, I don't know. I think for the most part, yeah, he was pretty good, but, you know, he's kind of hampered by the dialogue in this movie. That's what happens when you have a script like this, but...
Yeah, I mean, it felt rushed on Connery's part. It's like they put him into the sound booth and was like, okay, record this 90 pages of lines and dialogue. And it just didn't feel like he knew what was going on. It seemed too quick, like he was on a time limit or something. And a lot of the stuff that would have been memorable or would have been significant in the story, if this was a well-crafted story, like certain pieces that the dragon would say, you know, had a lot of meaning to them, but he would just say so much stuff that it just kind of lost its effectiveness.
Yeah, there's that scene where he talks about fearing death because he doesn't want to lose his soul, and you know, yeah. Stuff that actually like would have, yeah, I see what you're saying, it would have, you know, some real heft and weight behind it if it was in a better movie. But
right, and then when he talks to him at Avalon about, I mean, I did like that scene at Avalon. I thought that was kind of a nice scene. Towards the end of the movie, I kind of got a little more legit. I kind of started to enjoy it, and that scene at Avalon was pretty good because there wasn't a lot of dialogue.
I laughed out loud when they got to Avalon because I was like, really? He's being reunited by the ghost of King Arthur? Like, that's where this movie is going now? But
yeah, that's what that movie needed. It was a new direction. just like Bowen.
Nice. All right. I think we've covered a good portion of what there is to say about Dragonheart.
I'll tell you that much.
Anybody else have anything that we didn't bring up?
I think the problem isn't his voice per se, or isn't like his dialogue. It's that it's Sean Connery being Sean Connery, not being a dragon.
Right.
And that's partially in the writing. I think he knew what he was doing. He knew what kind of movie he was getting paid for.
Yeah.
You know, this was the time of his life where he was making really goofy movies and like just kind of having fun with things. And while I think he does respect the craft of filmmaking, I don't think he had any respect for this film. He never really showed it with his performance. And they literally went and said, we've got Sean Connery. We're selling Sean Connery. It's not Sean Connery. It's not this character. It's Sean Connery. That's why they play the voice first. That's why they apparently modeled the dragon after Sean Connery's facial expressions during the voice performance.
Yeah.
I mean, they made this movie so that they could have Sean Connery play a dragon, not necessarily to get a great performance. And I guess that's fine. But ultimately, it hurts the film. I mean, it's just another nail in the coffin of a film that really could have used something to just not make it a laughing stock, because it's really this really what it ended up being.
Yeah.
And there are some great actors in this film, and it shouldn't be such a joke, but it is, and I guess we're thankful for that to an extent, right? I mean, it's
yeah, it makes our conversation more interesting.
Yeah, yeah, but
it's fun. But yeah.
I mean, thinking about it, when I have kids and I'm going to show them a certain set of movies when they're home during the summer or whatever, I don't know. There's going to be certain movies that I'm going to show them from the 90s and the 80s because that's when I was a kid. And I think this is going to be one of them until like a 4-year-old or a 6-year-old or whatever. I think it's going to hold more sentimental value or more. It'll be more effective on someone because I think it is a kid's movie, and I think it does speak to children. As adults, we watch it and we see it's kind of goofy because we're kind of past that stage of fantasism and stuff like that. So, I mean, again, my theory is it was made for children, although it felt like or it was perceived as like a big epic movie period piece. I think it is for kids.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not any material that's adult themed. So, I mean, as a kid's movie, I think it's all right. It's got that 90s feel to it. Like if you go back and listen to our movies from the 90s, they usually have all kind of the same kinds of qualities that I like about it. And,
yeah.
You know, it was a fun movie to laugh about, I guess.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think, you know, all the battles are totally bloodless. There's nothing, no gore or anything really in it. Like, even when a dude gets shot in the chest with an arrow, there's like nothing that, you know, everything is completely appropriate for kids. Like, it's not, there's nothing, like, this movie could have been a totally different film if it was rated R and they just went for it and had Connery like ripping heads off of people and stuff. It's definitely geared toward a younger generation, I'd say. But
then we would have had Reign of Fire.
Ugh. Right.
I don't really remember. I mean, I remember seeing that movie in theaters, but I couldn't tell you a single thing about it other than the crazy fact that both Matthew McConaughey and Christian Bale star in a movie, a post-apocalyptic movie about dragons.
Well, only one of them is British, but they both have British accents.
Wow.
I think. But, I don't know. The movie's pretty forgettable. That's exactly the description you should give, Ben. It's Reign of Fire. I don't remember a thing about it.
the thing about Dragonheart for me is that, well, it's twofold, because I don't really understand why people get mad about movies ever. I mean, sometimes I get annoyed by them, and I'm like, why the hell did I just waste time watching that movie? But there's a really fine line between being so bad that it's good and being so bad that it should be burned and put and just like sent to hell. And like, this movie is far from that, you know. The movies that should be burned and sent to hell are usually movies that are trying to be good. And Dragonheart very clearly states in the beginning, without really saying it, but by putting a bucket on a little girl's head pretending to be a helmet, that kind of like sets the tone for this film as being unbelievably stupid, but in every conceivably awesome way. And when you put good actors in bad movies, it gives it credibility that makes you think, okay, at least you're making an effort. But then you see, but then you wonder how are these actors doing this? And I always go back to that. I'm always trying to watch these movies, and I see Dennis Quaid delivering these lines, and I start to think, you know, you were on the set for 30 days, 40 days. How many times did you go back to your trailer and just think, what the fuck am I doing right now? Like, what am I doing in this film? And why am I going to spend all my money doing drugs instead of like saving this up so that I could at least make something out of Dragonheart for the rest of my career? And like, I don't know. It's just I want to know what those meetings were like. Or did the agent just say, hey, yo, Dennis, I got you a movie. You're going to fight some dragons. Grow your hair.
In it.
Yeah. Connery's in it. He definitely wasn't making it to put food on the table, because as we know, in the 90s, Dennis Quaid suffered from anorexia.
Right. Yeah.
Zing. Couldn't lift himself out of a swimming pool.
Oh, but that's honest, what...
He's a very nice guy now. Very funny. Because he was working on a film in Chicago, and so through the grapevine, you hear he's a nice guy now. Good for him. Dragonheart did not slay his soul. You know.
Yeah.
He survived.
Yeah. You know what he is good in? The Parent Trap. I love that. That came out like 97. That was like a year later.
Okay. And give him The Rookie too.
Oh yeah, The Rookie was good.
Yeah.
I did like The Day After Tomorrow as well.
No.
That was good. I like that one. I like storm movies, I'm telling you. If it's got a storm, I'll watch it.
He's in some bad movies, though. Oof.
All right. Well, I think that pretty much wraps up our discussion on Dragonheart. So, Tyler, you want to go ahead and let people know what we're going to be watching next week?
Yeah, sure. Comically large lever here to my right. Let me pull that real quick. All right. Next week, Ben, you, me, and possibly Flash Gordon himself, we're watching Flash Gordon 1980. And I think the cover was painted by Alex Ross. I don't know. I'm going to just throw that out there. It looks very Alex Ross-esque.
Famed comic book illustrator.
Overblown comic illustrator, some might say.
Yeah, and I believe this movie also has a score by the band Queen. So
don't stop us now, bitch.
Nice. Looking forward to that one. Well, if you guys have seen Flash Gordon, then shoot us an email. Let us know what you think about it.
Dragonheart.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, too. Dragonheart. Any of the movies that we've talked about, whatever. Let us know. Sound off. That's what we're looking for. Yes.
Hey, Ben, there's Dragonheart fan fiction on the fan fiction site that I go to.
Oh, man.
Whenever I want to find fan fiction. There's still no Zardoz fan fiction, regrettably. But there is Dragonheart, and there is Dragonheart crossover with Harry Potter, so
interesting.
I might bring that up next week in a media consumed.
Okay,
I do find it interesting that this film had a direct to DVD sequel, which always kind of solidifies the quality of the original film, don't you think?
A little bit, yeah. I think it's definitely an indicator. Yeah,
like the Blue Crush and the Starship Troopers.
Yep.
Yep.
It's on Instant Watch, and I'm probably going to watch it.
Oh, gosh.
So, so you guys can shoot us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail, and that is at 904-469-6566. If you call and leave us a voicemail, you might sound something like this.
Hello, boys. Sir Sean Connery speaking, so ready your ears. Wanted to relay a tale of where Dragonheart came from. It involved a high level of Scottish whiskey, tens of hundreds of female groupies, and a script mix-up. My lines in Dragonheart were actually recorded during the early pre-production phases of Finding Forrester. You wouldn't think those lines would work, but they do. They do, lads. To make a long story short, I never agreed to be in Dragonheart, and also, Dennis Quaid is a woman, and I beat him. Yours truly, Sir Sean Connery. P.S. Shardars.
I believe that was a scene in Finding Forrester, wasn't it?
Look to the stars, dog.
Oh, man. So another voicemail there from our good buddy, Sean Connery. So thanks for the voicemail. We appreciate it,
Sean. I think
he's
called in before, hasn't he?
I think so, yeah.
I can't remember what he talked about last time. But
maybe for Outland or one of the other ones that we've done.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
I know.
He did call in about that. He's a funny guy. I like him.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, well, you guys can subscribe to this podcast for free in iTunes. Leave us a review if you get a second. That would be great. Check us out on Facebook. We are on Twitter as well at twitter.com/NJNMPodcast. We have 3 new followers that I wanted to mention, at DustoLab746, at Amis, and at FatMoneyPig, which I like that one. Thanks for the follows there, ladies and gentlemen, or possibly, I don't know, yeah, pigs. I don't know. What's that?
And pigs.
And pigs, yes, of course. So let's finish up the character name game real quick. The name was Will Dormer. Does anybody know what movie Will Dormer was from?
Yeah.
I figured you might, Mike. This was done specifically because I know that you're a big Christopher Nolan fan.
Yeah. It took me a second because I was thinking about Dahmer.
Ah, yes.
But, yeah. I'm trying to figure out what the connection is, though, that you're trying to make.
Okay. Well, tell us the movie.
It's Al Pacino.
Yep.
In Insomnia.
Yes, indeed. And Al Pacino also makes a cameo appearance in the Adam Sandler quote-unquote comedy Jack and Jill. So that came
Jack out. And Jill and Madea.
That came out this past weekend. So nicely done, Mike. I figured you'd get that one. So
yeah. You know, Jack and Jill, didn't you think when you first saw the trailer, didn't you think that was just one of those spinoffs from like the beginning credits of Tropic Thunder?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I can't believe it was real.
Yeah. You know, when Adam Sandler makes fun of movies like that in a movie like Funny People, you know, it's very similar kind of fake trailer situation to Tropic Thunder,
right,
and then goes back and does movies like that, it just completely removes any credibility that he has in my mind.
Hey,
well, you know what he does, right? You realize that he just writes plot ideas in a hat and picks it out, and that's what he makes. And then he makes $25 million at least opening weekend.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he's got Awesome 04,000. But it's really our fault as a society because we fill those theaters. We put the meat in the seats, man, and he makes like $40 million. And then,
yeah,
you know, if I was in that situation and all I had to do was write poopy jokes down and make like millions and millions of dollars, I'd do it.
Oh, totally. Yeah,
no questions asked.
It's absolutely
no integrity.
It's absolutely on us as a society, and we all deserve to be punished for supporting that.
And that's why we get movies like this.
But you know what I feel really bad for are the people who put the time in and the effort and the dedication to make that film work for the visual effect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like, they're pretty talented people. It probably looks really good. You wouldn't be able to tell that it's a matte. And yet, you know, those people have to go home and they have to say, hey, check it out. I made this movie. I put, you know, almost a year's worth of my time into it. It's Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
But at least it's not one of those movies that's shitty, but they want to make it look like it's good. At least
Dragonheart.
At least we know that it's going to be stupid. So we can't vindicate or whatever, can't crucify them for that. Yeah, because Sandler's like, yeah, this is stupid as shit. Go watch it, whatever.
Yeah,
and I'm sure they have fun making it because it's all him and his buddies. So whatever, more power to him.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go see it. Oh, wait. Actually, I might. It's the holiday season, isn't it? I might go actually go see it.
Now, please don't, Tyler.
It's usually the time that I go see shitty movies.
Please, please don't do that.
I'm off for like 4 weeks. I don't have anything else to do.
Please, I beg of you, as a personal favor, if you and I have ever been friends, do not see Jack and Jill.
All right. I'll wait till we get it. I'll wait till I get it for DVD for you for next Christmas. We'll watch it then.
God.
Four copies of Jack and Jill. Blu-ray, digital, iPad version, VHS.
All right. Well, Tyler, do you have any games for us before we wrap up?
Oh, yeah. Let's go ahead and start the Know Your Specs. Forgot what we were doing. Let's hit the game show music. Welcome to Know Your Specs, or sometimes in smaller circles called Up Your Specs. We welcome today our guests Ben and Mike. Let me go through the rules real quick before we go to the guessing round. This game is where confidence can win or ruin your day. Each contestant is given three categories, and you choose the one that you are more confident in guessing: the year, the director, or the star. Once you've chosen a category, I give you the name of the movie. Then you'll have to guess that movie's year of release, the director of the film, or the first listed star of the movie, which is dictated in Video Hound's Golden Movie Retriever book, The Complete Guide to Movies on All Home Entertainment Formats, including Laserdisc.
Nice.
So let's begin. Mike, you have a good handle on kind of what's involved here. You get to guess, or you get to pick one of the three categories, and I give you the name of the movie, and then you guess what specific spec of that movie you're looking for, whether it be the year, the director, or the star.
Yeah, I think I get it. I mean,
okay.
I think I do.
Okay, cool. Let's go ahead and start with Mike then. Which of the three categories are you more confident in guessing? Year, director, or star?
Star.
Star, all right. Okay, all right. Okay. Who starred in 2006's Little Man?
Little Man? Oh, that's Marlon Wayans, right?
Oh, that is correct. Marlon Wayans.
Nice.
Written by Marlon, Sean, and the other one.
Damon.
Oh my god, that's another one of those Jack and Jill type movies, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Very, very apropos. All right, Ben. You want to go star? We'll just keep with the category.
Yeah,
here.
Let's do it.
Okay, I'm going to give you... I actually have two for you in star, and one is really difficult. Okay. But if you get that one, you'll hopefully get the easy one as well. Who starred? Who was the first billed actor or actress in 2003's Old Boy, which you've already actually mentioned in this episode?
Oh, man. I know the character's name. Kim Joo Wong, is that right?
No, it's actually Min-sik Choi. I'm glad you knew that they were Korean actors. nice job. That was close enough. To kind of follow up with that, give you an easier one. Who starred in 2010's MacGruber?
Oh, man. That's the dude who plays Ted Turner on Conan occasionally.
I need an official name.
Will Forte.
There we go. All right. The score is 1-1. I'm not going to give you... I'm not going to deduct any points for your Old Boy.
Right.
So, Mike, the remaining two categories, year and director, which one do you think you're more confident in guessing?
With director.
Oh, director. All right. Who directed the film Little Miss Sunshine from 2006?
Oh, wow. You know, it's funny that I literally put that in the DVD player the minute before we started this to watch after.
That is so random.
But I think there's two, though.
That is correct. Can you name both?
Well, okay, yes. I know one is Jonathan Dayton, but I don't know the other one.
Are you looking at the DVD right now?
No, because I have sheet sleeves instead of, like, covers. But I can if you'd like to. No, you know what? I'm going to have to go. If you can give me a 0.5 points for this, that'd be great.
I'm going to give you the full point because you got one of them.
Yeah.
Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris.
Let's be honest. I'm sure Valerie didn't do shit.
She probably thinks Dragonheart's a good movie. All right. Nice job, Mike. All right, Ben. This is going to be I don't know if this is going to be an easy or hard one for you. Who directed 2003's Hollywood Homicide?
Oh, man. Rod Lurie?
No. Ron Shelton.
Ron Shelton. I knew
it. We've actually done an episode, episode 3 of the Not Just New Movies podcast, Hollywood Homicide. We usually don't remember the directors. At least I don't.
No, I don't either.
All right. Now, the final category is year. I actually forgot how to play this game, and so I was thinking about the categories, and I was like, wait, do I just give them a year, and then they're supposed to guess the film? I forgot that I reverse it. So, Mike, what was the year that The Shadow came out? The year of release for The Shadow, starring Alec Baldwin, and...
I think that's 96.
Ooh, very close. It was
Can I steal...
Yeah, no, but sure.
Oh, all right. I don't know either.
Stealing points, but you can go ahead.
I'm going to say 94.
Yeah, it was 94. Nice steal. You actually get to steal something that Mike owns, so congratulations. Mike, he'll be at your house momentarily. All right, Ben. What year did the movie Jurassic Park 3 come out?
Oh, man.
Starring your favorite actor of all time, William H. Macy. I don't know why. There was a surprise guest star by the lady from the first movie.
Man, I'm gonna have to say 2002.
Oh, so close. It was actually 2001.
I was gonna steal back.
Gotcha, bitch.
That's
right. I should have let you steal so you could actually steal something from Ben's place. But, you know, as a game show host, I'm going to let you have that because I kind of took it away from you, so you can go to Ben's place and steal something.
Little Indian switcheroo there.
Yeah, yeah. Whoa, Native American.
Like Mahatma Gandhi Indians. Come on, man.
Oh, okay. So that was Up Your Specs. Congratulations to our contestants. I think it ended up in a tie, 2-2.
I think Mike took it down.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because you didn't get the director.
Yep.
Ben loses again.
There we go.
Good job, Mike. Coming on to steal the win.
Indeed.
Yeah, the only reason why is because Little Miss Sunshine. I'm going to have to watch it now.
Yeah. Actually, a copy of Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest on the Nintendo Entertainment System, which is something I actually own. So
there you go. All right, well, let's wrap this thing up and just tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet this week. Mike Eisenberg, let's start with you.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Eisentower 30, Eisentower 30. I don't know. It's spelled exactly how it sounds. Come on. Also, I just started a new production company that I'd love to share about, Tall Tale Productions. We've got a lot of cool projects coming up, and we have a Twitter account called Tall Tale Chicago.
Do you do exclusively remakes of the Patrick Swayze movie?
Ironically, yes. We actually have an exclusive contract with Patrick Swayze estate. We earned the rights to the first 12 years of his life.
Nice.
We couldn't afford the rest of it.
Okay.
So just like every year you remake Tall Tale, like shot for shot remake.
Yep.
Yeah,
very similar to Ben and I's remake of Batman Forever, which we want to do every year until we go.
Well, we're doing a biopic of Patrick Swayze, and the actor's going to be once every 10 years.
There you go.
No, but that is a Tall Tale Chicago, TALLTALE. So just like it on Facebook and shit, and just stay tuned. We got some cool stuff coming up, and I don't know, if you like cool stuff, you would like Tall Tale. You know?
Nice. And your movie writing and stuff?
Yeah, I also write some stuff for movie sites, Screen Rant. I do every Tuesday I do the DVD Blu-ray breakdown, and that's mostly where you'll see me on Screen Rant. I also do some movie reviews now for themoviemash.com, so I'll be writing for my review for The Descendants this week coming up, so check that out.
Nice. Tyler, let's go to you.
Yeah, I operate the Not Just New Movies Twitter, so you can talk to me there. Other than that, I might get you know what I have been doing is the Swift and Steele's Search for Thomas Bowes, which should be coming along soon. So that's kind of where I've been putting a lot of my time instead of blogging. So There may be one of you that is looking forward to that. So, again, that's why I'm announcing it for that one person.
Why don't you tell people what Swift and Steel is, just since nobody knows?
When it comes out, I will.
Okay.
When it's available to view, I'll tell more people about it.
Okay, fair enough.
How's that sound? Maybe a little wetting the whistle there.
All right, I like it. Well, you guys can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. That's BenPears. You can find all my coverage of the AFI Film Festival and a bunch of other stuff at geektyrant.com. You can read my reviews at filmonic.com and notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. You can also hear me on the Geek Tyrant Weekly Podcast. Music for this episode of the show comes courtesy of Randy Edelman's Dragonheart score, which is, as we've mentioned, probably the best part of the entire movie. And as Tyler mentioned, we will be watching Flash Gordon for next week. So that's available on Netflix. Watch instantly. Check it out. Shoot us an email. Let us know what you think about it. Special thanks to Mike Eisenberg for taking time out of your day, hanging out with us. Appreciate it, sir.
I love doing it, guys. It's great. You guys are much more fun than my normal Sunday nights.
We like
thanks,
to hear.
Man.
All right, and thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.